Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, the PODcast. It is here. It's us. It is your friends, PrideDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. Pride of Detroit, find us on Facebook, and look on iTunes for Pride of Detroit. Go there right now, find the podcast, subscribe to it, leave a review, multiple stars, whatever you got to do.
Five stars only.
Five star. We're worth five star. We're worth at least five stars.
Do it now before you actually listen to this episode, because it might be a rough one.
This episode is fire. I can tell right now. I've got it in my belly. And or it could just actually just be the Cuba Libre. I don't know. It's been one of those nights. Welcome. It is the off-season. We should get around here first. I'm Chris Lemieux, editor at Pride of Detroit. Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader. And Alex Reno, our erstwhile draft expert, who is here for God knows why, but he's here.
Yep, I don't know why either, but I'm here.
Yeah, he's all out of sorts. But where are we this week with the offseason? What week is this? Does anyone count the weeks of the offseason?
Nope. I know there's like less than 98 days left until Lions football.
That's still 3 months.
Like, yeah, you kind of lose track after like week two or three of free agency, and then after that it's...
Yeah, it's like
why are you still counting, basically?
You carry on to the draft, and then after the draft, we kind of fall into this morass of, like, you lose a sense of purpose and direction.
OTAs, baby!
OTAs. Corey Fuller might be breathing his last. He took foot surgery on, I believe, Wednesday. If my day counts are right, he had foot surgery on Wednesday. And a lot of people saying that might be it for Corey Fuller with the Lions. They signed a guy to fill his roster spot while he's... Damien Copeland is his name. So there's that, but...
That's all you need to know about him.
That's his name. It's a warm body. It's a warm body. What else you want to say?
Andrew Zeller, I believe it was, the guard.
Yep.
I thought that was Cody Zeller for a second when I saw the name.
No, we're getting into basketball talk.
Yeah. Well, speaking of talk, we should probably get to our first thing. Jeremy, do you want to introduce this one? Because this is something you wanted to talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really a lot going on OTAs. The pads aren't even on yet, so you have to take pretty much any observation with a grain of salt. The Lions had their last OTAs today, which is we're recording on Thursday. Next week is minicamp, which might have a little more information. But I want to talk about a topic that one of our writers brought up. He's not with us today, so we're being a little unfair to Mike Payton. But he brought up the question of whether Jim Caldwell is responsible for Matthew Stafford's, you know, quote unquote turnaround last season. Has he made Stafford a better quarterback in the past two seasons? Because when the Lions were making that initial head coaching hire, the mantra was, we need a guy who can, quote-unquote, fix Stafford. So the question is, has he done that 2 years in? And I think it's an interesting question. The first question is whether Stafford has improved in the last 2 years, which I guess I'll propose to you guys. I don't quite see it yet, but I know some people think that he has. What do you guys think?
Do you want to go first on this, Alex, or do I need to carry this one?
I can. I guess I have more questions than answers when it comes to whether Stafford has increased his play under Caldwell right now. But, I mean, we've definitely seen some promise from, like, the second half of last season. And if you want to give any credit to Caldwell, or if you want to say that Jim Bob Cooter did all of that, I'm not really sure. But, yeah, what do you think, Chris? I don't even got anything else.
Yeah, you're kind of tapping out here. No, I understand. You know what? It's really hard for me to say, and I think this is just going to be what it is. Like, this Stafford that we see right now is just going to continue to be the Stafford that we're going to have for the rest of his career, really. Like, I think, like, everyone keeps talking developing Stafford, and I think at this point it's what you're going to get with Stafford. Like,
right.
Don't forget this about Jim Bob Cooter, because we introduced the Joe Lombardi corollary last week, I believe. Was it last podcast we introduced the Jim Lombardi corollary, which is basically, hey, you don't like this set of data, then throw it out because excuse, reason, X.
Right.
And that was Joe Lombardi. But at the same time, don't forget that Jim Bob Cooter was the quarterback's coach while Joe Lombardi was running the offense. The only thing that changed, it wasn't how Stafford was playing per se, but how the offense was moving around him. So I guess in that, if you're interpreting that way, then yeah, Stafford is what he's been for 2 years. It's just a matter of that the offense wasn't playing to his strengths. I know that tends to be the general refrain. But at the same time, too, like, I don't think anyone's looking at him outside of Detroit, that anyone is looking at Matthew Stafford and seeing, you know, the top tier quarterback in the league. However, I will say this about Jim Caldwell, that I said during the year that Caldwell, his reputation is that he helps improve quarterbacks, and I got routinely thrashed because that was before Joe Lombardi was fired and we were all going down a hole, and the DVOA numbers for Stafford were just terrible across the board, and everyone wanted Caldwell fired. So I know what's that poll sit at for Mike Payton's article?
Let me pull it up. I'm not
72%. 72%. 1,100 people have said yes. Jim Caldwell has made Stafford better.
And here's. Go ahead, Alex.
Okay, sorry. So my thing is, with all the people that are giving, like, all the credit to Jim Bob Cooter, it's like, if you're going to give all the credit to him, like, you have to have a little bit of credit to Jim Caldwell for hiring the guy. I mean,
well, the argument is that, like, he also hired Joe Lombardi, and, like, that, you know, he kind of went, and people think then he went to Cooter out of necessity. But I remember you were telling me last night, you couldn't find the source for this, but you would see some rumor.
Yeah, I was actually
rumor.
Just about to bring that up, but I didn't know if I should or not.
No, go on. Just it's a rumor. It's a web rumor. We haven't confirmed it yet.
Yeah, if anybody can, like, find this, because I swear I heard this somewhere. But I thought I heard somewhere that Cooter was actually Caldwell's first choice, but somebody like Mayhew or maybe the ownership wanted somebody more experienced or somebody that was older, like Lombardi.
Yeah,
I hadn't heard that rumor. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, we couldn't. We both looked around for the source last night when Alex brought this up. Was it last night? Yeah. It was like Wednesday night. We were talking about it, and we couldn't find the source per se. But it was something that we really wanted to look into, because, I mean, I could see that. I don't know either way. So I guess the problem is that, again, this is kind of the problem with NFL staffs in general, is that it's like there's so many moving parts. You don't know what is what. So,
yeah,
like, from all intents and purposes, it's, you know, it's such a great system set up. Hey, do you want to give the credit to the coach, or do you want to give it the credit to the coordinator?
To me, like, that's not necessarily even the issue at hand here, because that becomes, like you said, kind of splitting hairs. You don't really know who's doing what. You don't really know who's
responsible. So let's just say under the Caldwell regime, has Stafford gotten better?
Right. And I think I'm not convinced the answer is yes yet. I know, you know, 2014, his interceptions were a little down, and that was kind of viewed as an improvement. And coming into 2015, the idea was those interceptions would stay down, but the touchdowns would suddenly rise and go crazy.
Yeah, like, he's way too hot and cold still. Like, we just can't know for sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it's just interesting that it all happened, like, split. The whole split season last year is what draws everyone's attention. So, But I think if we look a little closer into that, like, look at the teams that the Lions played in the second half of that season. One, they were a lot worse than they were in the first half of the season.
Sure.
Two, the defenses were particularly bad. The Eagles were a disaster at that point. You have the Bears at least once. You have the Packers twice, who weren't very good. But then you look at that St. Louis game. It was the best defense they played down that second half of the season. And Stafford was bad again. Like, the offense floundered. Stafford had nothing going on, and you know, I think we're jumping to a little too many conclusions based on 8 games last season. That's a really small sample size. So I'm not ready to, one, praise Jim Bob Cooter for turning everything around, two, proclaim that Matthew Stafford is suddenly a top-tier quarterback or top-10 quarterback even.
But that's kind of thing is I feel his entire career we're going to be asking this question about Stafford. Like, I think he's beyond development at this point. People think I'm crazy for saying that, but, you know, I'm still going to hold to it. Let me just put it this way, is that Stafford, just looking at the Football Outsiders numbers, Stafford, like, since his peak in, I think, what was it, 2011, he's been declining in, like, advanced metric value every year since that 2011 season. Mm-hmm. 2015, you know, it was under Lombardi through those things when I put together an old article. The numbers he had were astronomically bad. However, by the time the season ended, he had actually improved for the first time. He had had numbers like, so he had finally had numbers that were, let me pull up his 2013 numbers, because those were kind of like 2013-2014 DYAR, DVOA numbers were kind of like the valley. So 2013, he was a, let me see, he had 690 DYAR, 4.9 percent DVOA.
And those numbers are just basically the higher, the better, correct?
Right, yes. It's higher, the better, especially for DYAR. So it's even lower in 2014, which is the first year of Jim Caldwell, but it's also the Joe Lombardi, too. It's minus 0.7 DVOA, 0.7% DVOA. 423 DYAR. Then in 2015, his DVOA, when I checked it, was like really low in the negatives, but he ends the season with, I believe, 800 DYAR and an 8% DVOA. So that's like, he hasn't had those numbers since the last year with, actually wouldn't be, the last year with Scott Linehan, pretty much.
How many years are we into Matthew Stafford's career now?
He was drafted in
2009.
Yeah, 2009.
Right after the 0-16 season.
So he's had, this will be his seventh
seasons, but the first two were cut short.
I think you know what you have.
I find it fascinating that we're like 7 years into his career and we just cannot find the answer to the same questions we've been asking.
If it was any other team and if it was any more catchy, I think it would be. It would be the, you know, is Joe Flacco elite kind of package.
Jesus.
Right. I think one of the beat writers pointed out that Stafford's like either the second or third oldest guy in the offense now. Just think about that for a little bit. Let that one sit in.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, people are just going to keep saying, I just feel like we're going to keep doing this, right? Up until his contract's over, people are going to keep saying, we need to develop Stafford, we need to develop Stafford, and just at what point, you just got to be like, we know what Stafford is.
It's never going to happen because he's got those, like, skills, those raw skills that are so phenomenal that people think that, you know, you just point this cannon in the right direction and suddenly it's going to be amazing. You know, and he's also one of those middle-tier guys that you, like, no one believes that he's a middle-tier guy. He's either underrated or way overrated, being right there in the middle.
Yeah, it's like what guys were saying. This, I think my favorite quote from this NFL draft was about Carson Wentz. You know, Carson Wentz is just good enough to leave your franchise in limbo for 8 years. And I feel like, I mean, I don't want to say that about Stafford because, I mean, our limbo was a lot worse than Stafford for the Detroit Lions. We've seen far, and I think that's a lot of the defense of him, is that we've seen far worse days. But depending on what kind of a Lions fan you are, if you believe the only goal is Super Bowl, then Stafford will let you down. But if you feel that, you know, for the Lions, it's like, hey, let's try to build a better culture around here. Let's have some fun, you know, enjoy winning records every now and then, or at least trying to be around 500, maybe some years be in the playoff chase and even make it to the playoffs, then I think Stafford's good enough for that.
Sure. I mean, I hate to use quarterbacks as wins as a quarterback stat, but the Lions have been pretty darn good with him behind center. I mean, I know it's probably not completely fair to throw out his two first years, but
He was injured in his second year, if I remember right.
Both years. He played 10 games his first year, 3 in his second, and he went 3-10 during those 13 games. But those are teams recovering from 0-16, so I'm fine with throwing those out. Sure. You throw those out, he's 39 and 41, so right around 500 there.
But you know, but hey, Jeremy, what's his record against teams with winning records?
Yeah,
and this is where you tell me to go to hell.
It's implied in my. I know you can't see my face, but it was implied in my face.
Well, this isn't a visual medium. How many times do I have to say that? Yeah, like I don't know. Like getting back to the original question, like because I believe that Caldwell. This is what we were talking about on a previous podcast, Jeremy, about the idea that Caldwell just. You know, he's never had a place where he's been where he's had enough years to put in whatever his vision might be.
Right.
Right? So, and that's always why I kind of sit here and I defend the idea of Caldwell coming back no matter what happens in 2016. I know it's not going to happen, but I think it probably, like, if you want to see, like, growth, like, and that's the only really way you can really do it. You have to grow everything around it.
I don't know, but 4 years? You give him till year four. That's kind of a lot. I mean,
well, how many
your
years
system should be in place by then?
How many years have we been giving Stafford though?
Well,
that's a little different.
It's not only a little different. I don't necessarily agree with the fact that some people are still holding out hope that he's going to be an elite guy. I don't think he will, but he might improve a little bit at this point. But
so when does Stafford's contract run out? 2018. 2017?
Something like that. I don't.
So I guess, I mean, it'll be interesting to see in a couple of years what the consensus is on that because it's going to be money involved again.
Yeah. It expires in 2018. So, you know, if he doesn't have a playoff win or he's an unrestricted free agent in 2018, so he's got two more seasons left on the contract.
Consensus wisdom will be that they'll be, of course, extend him, but I don't know. Like, it sounds, at least from what Bob Quinn's talking about drafting quarterbacks, like, more proactively. So we'll see if that stays in the cards. But I think we should take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple more NFL topics. We want to talk about the offseason, how much we hate it, and ideas to fix it, including a development league. Brr? Really? Oh, okay, we'll talk about that. We're barreling along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, the PODcast. Before we get into the next segment, have y'all seen those really ugly Steph Curry Under Armour shoes that are making their way around the internet?
You mean those perfectly fine tennis shoes that the internet's freaking out?
The white shoes? You have no taste. You have no taste, Jeremy. We've established this already.
I'm not a sneakerhead, and I don't understand the sneakerhead culture at all.
Well, I'm not either.
Way old. Like, I don't know. It's actually all sports fashion. Like, I don't give a shit about uniforms. I don't give a shit
all
about
white shoes.
People,
man,
get
with silver lining.
Amped up about that shit. I don't care. But where would the just, hell you? I'm all about comfort and durability.
Jeremy, you would be, you're the kind of guy who goes out with spots and stripes.
All right, Dad.
Yep. Sure.
They honestly, to me, look like a pair of my dad's New Balance shoes.
Yeah, they look like New Balance shoes. I want to read from a couple of great things from my favorite comedians right now are the Kid Mero and Desus Nice. And I'm going to read from the Kid Mero's Twitter feed about what he's naming these shoes. So he calls them the I Have a Bass Pro Shops Reward Card Lowe's. He calls them the Being a Police Officer is a Really Hard Job and They Deserve Our Respect and Gratitude Lows.
Getting political on this.
We are. The Can I Have a Filet-O-Fish and a Black Coffee Please Nines.
Come on now. You like Filet-O-Fish.
I do, but that's only that during one. Lent, and it's because I'm Catholic.
Sure you are.
The Prostate Exam Sevens.
Hey man, Check your health. It's a real problem, all right?
Yeah. Derek, shout out to Derek on Twitter, also threw this at me. Why does Thai food have to be so spicy, Lowe's?
I like it.
Yeah. All right. We should probably get to the other topic. I want to do a couple more here. This is from Jesus Nice now. Piers Morgan raises some valid point sevens. Oh, and my favorite, Cam Newton is a thug, seven lows.
That's a pretty good one.
All right. We can move on to everything else and stop making people mad at me.
Join Twitter, guys. It's fun.
It is. It's amazing, man. Just Twitter. When Twitter goes off, when the hive mind, like, converges on Twitter, it is a beautiful sight sometimes. Other times it's awful.
Unless Hillary Clinton is tweeting at Donald Trump, that is.
Oh, yeah, delete your account, yeah. We're not going to get too political. I just really hate that politicians know our memes. They shouldn't have access to our memes.
Hey, man, they all run their course. And once a politician grabs a hold of them, it's time to make a new one.
You're sitting here rooting for either Trump or Hillary to grab the crying Jordan.
Okay, maybe a little bit. I
was going to say, because if they get their hands on the crying Jordan, it's over. That meme is done.
It feels, I know I've said this a billion times before and been wrong, but I feel like at this point it has kind of run its course a little bit. It's been, what, like over a year at this point that we've been doing this?
You were just laughing at these shoes we were making fun of, the crying Jordans on those shoes.
Listen, the subtler the better, and if I don't notice it upon first viewing, it's still good, but people aren't doing that anymore. Okay. Subtlety is dead.
Let's talk about the offseason. So, I want to kill the offseason. I think we all should, because I keep looking at this. Name me another sport that has an offseason longer than its sport's regular season.
Curling? I don't know. No.
Like, yeah, without going like, but I mean of like the major sports.
No, I'm kidding.
Like, yeah, like,
yeah, there isn't one.
Like, even rugby is like longer, I think. Maybe. I don't know, to be honest. But, like, you know, international, like soccer, like, yeah, you have, if you look at European soccer, like, there's like zero time off because there's like international stuff to fill the void. Like, right. Hockey and basketball, they're all back within like a couple months. Baseball, you know, what is it? It's October, and then you have spring training in March and April, and before you know it, it's back to baseball. Football, though, we get 5 months. And we have arbitrarily extended it because of the draft and because of spring training, and I keep calling it spring training, because of training camp and OTAs, and I hate it. So how do we end the offseason, Jeremy? Because I don't think, like, I've been really doing some research on this. This is something, I'm not saying this because I worry about the health of football, but at the same time, like, football is like less and less being a sport that like regular people play in many regards. Like, there's like youth leagues, but like, how many, like, outside of like maybe like the random flag football league, when do you see your friends being like, hey, let's have rec league football, tackle football?
Nah. I mean, well, that takes way too much together and all that stuff. But I think the question needs to be split up, because I don't think the NFL needs more. I don't think the NFL needs more to fill the offseason, because they do.
But they need to fill the offseason.
They do. I mean, it's all kind of fake. And, you know, like you said, we're extending the offseason things, OTAs, where guys aren't even in pads.
And to be clear, like, some people do like that stuff. Some people like, I think when we say you don't need to extend the season, I think there is enough people out there who just are so craven and silly that they want to be eating the hype for seven right. months. They don't want sure. to actually, like, have games that, like, destroy their hopes and dreams of a Super Bowl for every one of the 32 teams of the league.
Right. But in terms of, like, fandom, self-serving reasons, we absolutely need something to fill this offseason, like, so that we're not
as a fan of a team, but as a fan of the sport itself.
Exactly. Yes. So that we're not spending time dissecting every single Pro Football Focus article that they talk bad about the Lions, or every single, you know, countdown of top players or top quarterbacks or any of that sort of stuff. Like, I don't want to write about that stuff. I have to, and I understand that, like you said, there are some people that love that ramp up to the season, but this is all leading up to the point that you and I agree on. We need some football.
Yeah, and we have football blue balls right now. Like, we can't take this. We need to shorten. Like, the off season is about 2 months too long. And I don't mind, and that's, you know, you make fun of me for watching the Canadian Football League, but I watch CFL because it starts in July.
As we all should.
I watch it in July because, by God, it's football on my television.
No, it's not. That is not football.
It is football. You say football, but...
Alex, I will end you.
Are you sure it's football, Chris?
It is football. You can get you can go to a game, you can go to a stadium and get drunk. You can tailgate and get drunk. It is football.
Is that all the requirements?
I could go
you need
to a
darts
competition and get drunk. I could go anywhere and get drunk.
I would love to tailgate
a darts game.
Dude, the English go crazy for their darts game, but that's not the point. So, what was the solution we came up with, Jeremy?
Well, it's a solution that has been kicking around in the heads of some high uppers in the NFL, but hasn't really made it to the meetings, and that's a developmental league.
But it's not even like, yeah. So let's clarify when we talk about developmental league. Yes, right now the NFL has a developmental league. It has a minor league. It's called the NCAA. However, there are a ton of problems with the NCAA. There's a ton of problems with college football. The least of which is that they're not paying the athletes, but that's a question for another time, and it's going to get people mad if I start harping on that. But at the same time, too, like, yeah, there's a lot that you, like, can't control. Every other, like, I remember this college football season, like, there was, like, a New York Times piece out about all these NFL coaches complaining about the fact that, like, college coaches don't run the West Coast offense. They don't run pro style systems anymore because spread offenses and, you know, those kind of weird packages are more effective at winning college games. Up tempo, spread, pistol, like those win you college games, but they don't prepare you for life in the NFL. And you can make the argument that, yeah, probably the NFL is probably too rigid when it comes to that stuff too. Like, it's their fault for not adapting to what they get with the quarterbacks. However, the obvious solution is go for a developmental league and to have your own teams. We see kind of these startup leagues try to do it every now and then, but I think the key is, and this is where it helps to reduce the size of the offseason, you put them in the spring.
Right.
So like what with the USFL.
Whatever happened to that FXFL? Wasn't that an experimental?
Well, that's kind of the thing, because that was like one of like several different leagues. There was like the A11 that was trying to do it too. All of them have the same goal, you know, start up this league, this developmental league in the spring, and then if everything's set together, hey, maybe the NFL swoops in and tries to, you know, sponsor us. And it hasn't worked because the NFL is, if nothing else, skinflints. Like, they don't like spending money, and, like, they're more than content to rest on the laurels of college football basically pay, like, college football takes care of the development. But as the style of college football goes away from the pro style, I think it will behoove them more. Plus, at the same time, if they own the developmental league, that's more revenue for them.
Right. And, well, I think part of the reason it hasn't happened is they kind of tried with NFL Europe and it didn't work out. I'm reading the CBS article that we kind of spurred our discussion to begin with, and the Cowboys executive president Stephen Jones talks about the NFL Europe, and he said, you know, we lost a lot of money, but there were a lot of good things that came out of this, and this is some, you know, collateral bonuses, if you want to call it that, to a developmental league. One, you get refs on full time now.
Right.
So refs are improving. They get used to new rules. They get used to
standardize
all that sort of stuff.
The union a little better. Yeah.
Um, obviously players are improving. You get some guys who didn't get drafted, get a chance to prove themselves, maybe get themselves up to the big league.
That was actually a really good tweet I saw. I think it was NFL Philosophy on Twitter. He was actually making this point about a month back about how the NFL kind of missed NFL Europe. He was naming off some players. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but, you know, exactly that. Like, you can send guys over to NFL. You could send guys over to NFL Europe that wouldn't necessarily start. Like, every other league out there has a feeder system to develop guys. The closest you have in the NFL is the practice squad. And how many times do you see a guy come off the practice squad to make the regular roster and stay there?
Just imagine if Kellen Moore was on the Rochester Hill Cubs for 2 years.
I think when it comes to NFL Europe, I think, like the XFL, it was ahead of its time. Like, the whole idea of it, like, if you ran it today, in today's sports culture where, you know, we're starting to see the contracts on, like, big league on we're starting to see some of these television contracts come back down to earth. Like, I know for one of the college contracts, Conference USA, they finally did not, like, get more money. But, like, people would, like, television would still pay very well for an NFL Europe today if it was in the spring.
That's what it'll all come down to. If it can make money,
right? And
the
I
NFL
wrote,
will do it.
Yeah, and I wrote about, like, you know, the German Football League is now kind of bigger in Germany, and a lot of that's because of Frankfurt, the team that they had there when it was the World Football League or whatever. Like, these are kind of things that take time to develop. But this is always the big question: is the NFL interested in growing the game of football and improving itself, or do they just care about what's their main product, which is the NFL itself? Like, it's the commissioner of the NFL versus the commissioner of baseball, for instance.
R.I.P.
What? Oh, right, yeah. The
football.
Yeah, yeah. The commissioner of the NFL, R.I.P. Roger Goodell, yes, yes. But, like, that's kind of the big difference there, right? Like, when it says commissioner of the NFL, it's implied that it cares only about that league rather than caring about the sport of American football.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the big question that's always hung over the NFL. And the NBA, the NHL, they've always had it in them to go out and, you know, work on the game and how the game will grow internationally. The NBA puts a lot of money and support into these international leagues sometimes. The question is the NFL going to do the same?
So what would your theoretical best-case scenario be? Would it be a farm system like, you know, the Toledo Mudheads, Grand Rapids Griffins type thing, or would it be just kind of a separate entity that maybe those players, like, there would be an NFL Europe draft the next year?
You know, it's kind of interesting to see because, I mean, we already kind of have the latter thing in a confederated system between Arena Football, the Canadian Football League, you know,
right.
The German Football League, if we're going way lower. You know, we saw Moritz Behringer get drafted. We saw Moritz Behringer get drafted by the
Vikings.
By the Vikings, yeah, absolutely. Yep. And Marcus Kuhn had originally been in there, too. And, you know, you have all these other lower-level leagues across America that no one really knows much about unless you stumble onto them, like the CIF or I'm trying to think what else is out there. Like, there's, like, indoor football leagues all over the country.
Right.
But they're, like, they're just so rock bottom, no one really cares about them. You know, this is the whole Kendrick Ings piece I wrote. Like, one of the first big pieces I did with you guys at Pride of Detroit was about Kendrick Ings coming up through all these, like, ridiculous leagues that made no sense to the average football fan. So we're already doing that system, and it's not working out.
So, but can the NFL just throw their stamp on leagues like that, and suddenly it's popular?
I think it's more than that. I think the NFL would have to, like, actually invest money and try to build it from the ground up. But, yeah, I think throwing a stamp on it by, like, saying, like, you know, because it's not just like, that's not how baseball works. Baseball, AAA, single-A, double-A, those
right.
are part of the baseball system. Those are, like, controlled by Major League Baseball, and they're attached to teams. Like, and it's the same thing with the American Hockey League for the NHL. It's the same thing for the D-League and the NBA. Like, these things are kind of controlled in a certain way. Soccer's crazy. Soccer's weird. I'm not even going to start to try to comprehend soccer because there's just so much of it. But, like, I think that you need, like, actual feeder teams. And you need them for the spring. Like, you need chances to not even just test out some of your college prospects, but again, just like to have more players in the system. And that's kind of the other obstacle too, right? Is that you're basically, because rosters for a football team are already probably the biggest in all of organized sports. Like you're looking at least like a 50-man roster or so. Like you're basically, and you're going to be doubling that with a developmental league, unless you like share that with your practice squad or something. I don't know. Like, yeah. But I think there are ways to do it. Like if you just reuse the practice squad and let them play in the spring or something.
Well, I have a question for Alex. What do you think about doing like a 35-round mock draft? If that's the case.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's doable for sure. No.
I don't think you even need to extend the draft that long, though. Like, I don't think you would need to extend the draft that long, right?
Probably not.
Like, you could add, like, two rounds or something, but, like, maybe that's it because, you know, undrafted free.
Spread into, like, 7 days of the draft?
I don't know, man. I don't think you even need to go that far. You wouldn't need to add that much because undrafted free agency works pretty well. And, I mean, like, again, it's talent so top-heavy in the NFL anyway that, like, you know, your top, you know, the guys you're taking in those first rounds, they're not going to be the guys going to your D-League here unless, like, they need extra seasoning.
Plus, there's so many veterans and you know, 4, 5, 6 year players who are just kind of floating around in purgatory right now. They're not on any teams. I mean, you think of a player like Joey Cabela right now, he'd be perfect on a D-League team, even though he's kind of old at this point.
Right, but. But we've seen the growth of this thing when it comes to this kind of stuff. We have the Veterans Combine now. And even before the draft, we have all these, like, you know, Shrine Games, and the Senior Bowl has exploded in like, you know, what that means for draft covers. There is an appetite to have these things there. And I think people would, I mean, I think it would matter for people if you, like, just had a bunch of teams in, like, Florida and Arizona and, like, you know, Texas. Like, people will go to these games as long as they're, like, outside and they're actual real football. Like, the hang-up, I think the hang-up with, like, arena football, which inhabits the same sphere of time as our proposed spring league here, the people get hung up on that just because of the format of the game. It's not that it's football in the spring, it's that it's football in a box.
Yes. It's not football.
And yet people go to those games, though. But that's what I'm saying. People still go to those. You still fill up those. You probably get at least 10,000 people going to each of those games, depending on the size of the arena. 9,000 maybe. But I'm saying, like, again, that's arena football. Like, you don't need to make these stadiums, like, giant. You don't need to be getting 50,000 people to these games.
Sure.
And again, you can still sell the TV money. Like, you can't tell me that you would get less than what, like, say, Conference USA or the Mid-American Conference is getting for their, like, you know, middle-tier college football.
Plus, I mean, what's ESPN showing these days when, you know, the NBA and the NBA playoffs aren't on? They're not showing baseball all day. They're showing, you know, esports, and I know people are going to get mad that I'm making fun of the spelling bee, but the spelling bee.
That's always the weirdest time of year when that spelling bee is on, man. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, Omi.
I can't do it, but I know that there's people out there that actually watch that.
I watch it.
I don't know why.
Dude, I watch it. It's lit.
No, it's not. It's literally the opposite of lit.
Literally the opposite.
It is ironically lit. Let's take a quick break, and I think we should start getting into the mailbag. What do you guys think?
Yeah, let's do it.
That's really all I'm here for.
Fire it up.
All right, back here on the podcast, and before we get into the mailbag this week, by the way, as always, send your questions to @PrideOfDetroit on Twitter, or look for the Ask POD posts going up every week when we decide to take all of your questions. Before we get to that, though, we have a caller. We have a caller. We do have a Google Voice inbox. We have been. Do we have a name? Do we have a brand for the call-in line?
Yeah, it needs a name, huh?
It does.
POD call-in line does not have a very good.
Yeah, if you want to send something to us, we've been kind of, we tested it out for the draft and it was a smash hit. People loved it, but we've kind of like put it into storage until the season itself so we can get your hot takes like on game day as the game ends immediately to throw it on the podcast. There's not a lot of reason to use it in the off season, unfortunately.
But I mean, hey, if you got something burning, yeah. I'd say still call in. Yeah. We don't have a ton to talk about these days.
Right.
So.
Here we go. The number is 313-757-2981. Now try to make your calls short, efficient, quick, to the point. Get that gut feeling out. Get your point immediately. This isn't, you know, the Mike Valenti call-in show. However, we're going to make an exception today to that last rule about, like, you know, keeping it short. Because a poor soul called us to from, he says in the call, he's from the middle of nowhere. The caller ID that I have on these things says he's from a place called, in some place in Wyoming.
Right.
That might just be his... That might just be, you know, his area code for his number or something, but still.
No, he said he was from Wyoming.
Yeah.
I believe.
So,
yeah.
Like, we're doing this because, like, yeah, that's a very poor soul having to live in that part of the country, in that part of the flyover where, like, we're all
confirm there are people in Wyoming, guys.
I watch Wyoming football, so. But, like, yeah, no, I feel for those people. Like, I mean, you know, me, Alex, Ryan, we're all living in the Midwest in, like, you know, the ruins of Detroit and Toledo. And yet we kind of, like, still marvel at the great unbidden West, the ancient, like, gap between, you know, Iowa and the Pacific Ocean, pretty much. So we're going to play this here, and I just want you guys to enjoy this. This guy has a lot of thoughts, and... For his sake, I'm speeding this call up because there were about five of these.
Well, hello there. This is Orion Morris, located in Wyoming. Listener to the podcast, and you guys do a good job, and it's appreciated. It helps driving around be more entertaining. I just wanted to give a statement here of some of my frustrated and isolated observations out here in the middle of nowhere. A little back history. I haven't missed a Lions game in probably 10 years. I remember the 0-16 season. I missed the first half of the last game out of principle, but then my addiction got the best of me, and I had to turn it on. And then the struggle of getting a Lions game in Wyoming has always been relatively expensive for Sunday ticket or, you know, to have to go to an establishment that has the games on. And out here in Wyoming, there aren't many. So the commitment has been hard. However, I just wanted to kind of view or discuss my opinion about the Lions' current situation, which I am optimistic about, and then kind of give my opinion on the prior history and relevance to that situation. I was going to do more extensive online research about how statistically they have ranked in regards to offensive and defensive rankings, but I got a little lazy, and I'm not going to do that. I think I probably would have if it would have been a live airing, but I'm happy, and I hope you listen to this regardless. So if my statistical estimations are off, which I'm sure they will be to some degree, feel free to correct me if this does make it on the podcast, and you know, adjust whatever variations in my delusional mind might have. But I just wanted to kind of bring back a few years when the Lions hired Jim Schwartz and Linehan, I believe in 2009. Stafford was a rookie, got hurt first 2 years. I was scared of the pick at the time just because of my memory of Joey Harrington being such a high draft pick. Okay, sorry. This is Orion Morskin. Must got cut off. Apparently the message machine can only hold so much. So I'll try to Twitter this up a bit and shorten it a little bit. But anyways, Linehan, Schwartz come in. Stafford gets hurt his first 2 years, and then in 2011 we saw a significant improvement in the offense all the way around the board. I mean, they were scoring a lot more points. Putting up a good amount of points, and their defense at the time, no run game, no defense, which has pretty much been the story of Stafford's career. He's never had a run game paired with a defense ever, and it sort of drives me nuts a little bit that people are so hard on Stafford to talk about his interceptions and everything when they don't take into account the fact that any other quarterback that is of a similar standing as Stafford, you know, whether it be Joe Flacco or Tony Romo or whoever outside of your top three, which are, you know, Rodgers, Brees, and Brady, they have all had at least one or the other when they were successful. Anyways, you look at what Rodgers did last year, and he took a decline just without the running game. And Stafford has also had a very porous old line his entire career. And I feel like I feel like this message is going to get caught up, cut off, and I'll have to call back. But in 2000, with under Linehan, he had the offense was what carried the team. Schwartz was a defensive-minded coach, but Gunther Cunningham couldn't seem to put anybody put together a scheme with all the talent that they had at the time that could allow the offense to take their foot off the gas pedal. You know, I remember Matt Flynn putting up 45 or whatever it was, and then the playoff game against the Saints, and the same deal. You know, they were forced to press the gas pedal, which is going to correlate to an increase in interceptions, your completion percentage, all that stuff. And again, doing it without a run game, consistently having to score more points than the other team to even be relevant. And then in that last year when Schwartz was there, they were very close to making the playoffs if it wouldn't have been for several late losses late in the game where the defense just couldn't hold it together. The offense was trying to play clock management. Sorry, now 4-4-4 of them. I'm trying to end it with a crazy girlfriend or something at this point. I wish your message box was a little longer. However, anyways, at the last year, I felt like at the end of the season, you know, strength schedule played into that to some extent. However, most of your top teams, you know, do have a lot of terrible strength schedule. It's just rough. We're rather getting all the way through almost. However, things did turn around at the end of the year last year for him. I was happy playing Kev Caldwell. You know, I wasn't a fan of the hire. I am a fan of the coordinators at this point. I think Tyrell Austin showed remarkable ability to adjust personnel last year with not being injured to start the season. You had defense turned around about halfway through. They were doing much better than prior seasons regardless, excluding the previous year. The defense kind of held their own last year. Gooder finally put together an offense that the running game improved in, and Stafford became much more efficient. I think 19 interceptions, or 19 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, scored out of the year last year, and I'm optimistic about following this next season. However, I'm still concerned. They need to figure out a way to establish some sort of running game to take pressure off him. When people slam Stafford so hard about about interceptions, completion percentage, all that sort of stuff, I don't think they're really taking into account the fact that he had his foot on the pedal his entire game his entire career, and then last year and the previous year, he had an offensive coordinator that simply could not produce offense that could functionally block for him at all, and could constantly run the football. Those are the main reasons for optimism next year, is that Jim Bob, I don't know if you saw about how Dallas, their great offensive line, it's simple. You block the block, and you're not going stunt trips and crazy scenes. I just would like you guys to maybe acknowledge that, let us comment on that, and we elaborate upon that, and hopefully you don't use these 4 or 5 voicemails live, I suppose. Again, there's no... All right, sorry, to just wrap up the previous 4 messages. My main deal, though, is that we jumped on Schwartz there when the offensive game gave a defensive-minded coach who couldn't put together a defense. Stafford had his phone gas the entire time, and was always continuously having to stay ahead, play catch-up. Caldwell comes in, offense under Lombardi was atrocious, and defense carried him. The last year, under Schwartz, we lost a bunch of very close games that were underway, and made sure the NFL, regardless. However, the 14 under Caldwell went to the playoffs, we won those games that had gone either way. I didn't feel good about 15, just because I felt like the offense wasn't as good as we thought it was, and the turnover came down or whatever, but mainly because the defense played so well. What I'm trying to get at is, you know, I didn't like the Caldwell hire. I felt like Lombardi was going to be good. He wasn't. Now I feel like we have two coordinators that have the potential to get the job done, obviously and defensively scheme-wise, for the first time in Stafford's career, for the first time. That's why I feel like I'm very optimistic about this year, even without Calvin Johnson. I understand, but I do feel like for the first time, Tyrell Austin is showing he can adjust and put a defense on the field that is going to allow 25, 27, 28, 30 points games, and without an offense that's going to be able to consistently move the ball. Hopefully, the offensive line is what it was at the end of last year, but better with new personnel. And hopefully, the defense continues their pace that they had at the end of last year as well.
Again, thank you guys for listening to this crazy voicemail bomb thing that I did. I know in my initial tweet I asked for 5 minutes, probably went over that by now, but I knew it wasn't something that I was going to get across in a tweet. I feel like I maybe 50% got across what I was trying to get at in this series of voicemails, but you know, I'd love to discuss it on the air with you guys.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much for your call.
We appreciate it. Hey,
we appreciate it.
We got reach all the way in Wyoming, and we love hearing takes, even if they're long. But
I had to cut it down so that we could get bomb track in the whole way. And unfortunately, like your fourth of the 5 calls, like it was completely blank. So.
But hey, continue to give us calls.
Sure.
Keep them short. If you want to ask questions during the calls, we can answer some questions. But if you want to just kind of rant and rave for, you know, a good 30, 40 seconds, that's cool,
less
too.
Less than that. I would like less than that.
Okay,
but
15 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313.
I wouldn't call that a rant, but...
Well, just as a quick, a quippy line like we were having during the draft. 313-757-2981. Now let's actually get to the other questions, the written questions, if you will. All right, we should probably take a couple from Twitter to begin with. So, Kevin Dobler from Kevin JDD. Shout out to Kevin, by the way.
He's always got some good questions.
Well, met him. Alex and I met him at Thanksgiving. Kevin is, if you're ever watching a game on Fox Sports, the Detroit Lions, and you see in an end zone a red jersey that seems out of place,
Oklahoma Ryan Broyles jersey.
Yes, that is Kevin. He is an Oklahoma fan, and that is the Ryan Broyles Oklahoma Sooners jersey. That's why it's red.
Speaking of developmental league, that guy.
Yeah.
Would have won a developmental Super Bowl or whatever they're going to call it.
Sure, just minor whatever, yeah, sure. His question is, Rudy Johnson and Tatum Bell, who was truly at fault?
I love this question, and if you don't know the context of this question, Rudy Johnson and Tatum Bell used to be running backs for the Lions. At one point, I think it was Tatum Bell that got cut, or I don't know, one of them got cut, and then Bell was accused of stealing Rudy Johnson's luggage at some point. And
I love this story so much, man.
I wish we would have gotten more details on what exactly happened.
It sounds like an investigative report that we need to go off on. Pride Detroit, use our powers for good.
Hey, we've got 3 months until the regular season.
I know, man.
That's plenty of time to go all 30 for 30 on this situation.
So what do you think? Who's at fault, then?
Rudy Bags, man. How do you get accused of stealing luggage and not actually do it? How does that happen?
Ryan, Reno?
I don't even know enough about the story to answer that question.
Throw someone under the bus, damn it.
All right, I'm going to throw Tatum Bell under the bus.
Okay.
Just take the opposite side there?
Yeah, I got to be different here.
Okay. Let's take at Motor City Go Blue asks, where do you see us ranking in rushing offense? Also, do you guys think Ebron will improve like he did last season? I do not think rushing offense is going to improve too much this year, but granted...
So you think it's going to be dead last?
No, it wasn't dead last by the end of the year.
By yards it was, not by yards per carry.
Well, I think by, like, again, I go by Football Outsider stats. Like, I think there were teams below the Lions by the end of the year. So
I still think it's hard not to improve. I think we'll probably be, like, at best, maybe middle of the pack, probably around the high 20s, maybe.
Let's see. So DVOA says that rushing offense ranked 27th last year.
Yeah.
So, you can probably improve, but I would argue you're not going to improve by that much.
Yeah, I think ceiling is maybe, like, 14th.
That's
with
high,
like a,
man.
Yeah, it's a ceiling. That's the ceiling. Yeah, that's if everything clicks. Right. And, you know, it does take a while for offensive linemen to click, so I wouldn't really be surprised to see this as bottom five running game again. I mean, I don't think it'll happen. I think they'll probably, like Reno said, be around 20, maybe into, like, the low teens, so 18, 19. But don't expect the world out of Amir Abdullah.
Yeah, I think they'll improve. I find it hard to believe that they'll be the same or worse. Like, they were just, I don't know, abysmal to me.
Yeah.
They've been abysmal for a long time.
Any Ebron comments about what?
Well, we've got another question. We've got another question here from Harrington HOF in the thread, who asks us, "What exactly about Eric Ebron is so infuriating? All the reasons you can think of."
I don't really. I don't like the hair at all. Let me just go on record as saying
his hair?
It's ridiculous.
What? No, it's not.
It's like a flat top with highlights.
Jeremy,
like,
this isn't a visual medium, but can we talk about your hair?
Go for it.
Your hair is an atomic disaster.
No,
shots
man.
Fired.
Dude, if I had highlights, you could come at me and I'd take it. But
what the hell is wrong with highlights in the hair? Like, come on, man.
Ask Ryan Seacrest. I mean, come on.
Ryan Seacrest? What
Eric,
does he
you brought
have
to Ryan Seacrest on the podcast?
My God, man. Shut down the podcast. Shut it down right now.
But no, let's move on to other things about Eric Ebron.
I love Eric Ebron. I know.
Can we answer the question on whether he'll improve? That's a pretty important question, I feel like.
Sure.
All right.
Go for it.
Yeah, it's all okay, you, Alex. Well, it's all you. What are you doing? You trying to direct this podcast and then make me do all the work?
Okay, well, yeah, I think he'll improve. I think he'll improve, especially in Jim Bob Cooter's offense with all the risks that he wants to take.
What do you think is like a realistic number you could expect in terms of like yardage?
Well, what did he end last year with? Like 400 and some yards, maybe?
It was probably a little bit more than that. I know he finished, I just wrote up something about he finished the season with about 180 yards in the last three games. Let me just
I think it's realistic to say that he could even finish anywhere between 700 to 1,000 yards.
Yeah, he had 537 last year. So, yeah, 700 would be a pretty big improvement. 1,000 would be huge.
That would be his ceiling, probably.
He's definitely going to improve. I think we're probably all in agreement. Maybe improve is the wrong word. He's just going to be
He'll get more use, I think.
Yeah.
He'll get more use.
Yeah, like with the need for a bigger receiver, a bigger target with Calvin Johnson gone, I think they're going to have to throw it his way, especially in the red zone.
Yeah. And he's only got, what, 6 career touchdowns, so he could easily double that next year.
All right, let's move on. Here's a new question here. Let's get to this one from CB Russ. If you could attend only one game this year, which one, away games are allowable, would you do? Would you watch the game from a box suite, the 50-yard line lower level, the sideline, or your mom's basement?
Where I get all my writing done, huh? I think I would pick Monday night at Dallas Stadium, AT&T Stadium, Jerry World. That's the one I was always thinking about going to the most, but the price of the ticket's probably going to be too high, and it's New Year, Christmas Eve too, so not really a great time of year.
Are we picking a team from this year's schedule, or are we picking any team?
I don't know.
I guess it's open to you. I was just going to go off this year's schedule.
Well, he says this year, so I think he means 2016.
What's your guys' answer?
I don't really have one. Whichever one I'm going to be in, it's going to be in a near a dingy TV or some kind. Like when I lived in Savannah, Georgia, I used to go out to Tybee Island to a oyster bar out there on the beach, and just drink mason jars of Bloody Marys until I nearly passed out while watching football. Like, those are my NFL Sundays. Like, I don't have those anymore. So, that's my answer. I would rather be back down in Savannah watching whatever Lions game I could at Bernie's Oyster House.
I think the correct answer to this question is at Vikings to see the new stadium, and we're all going to have a Pride of Detroit meetup and do it.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Everybody's invited. All the readers, all the writers. Let's get together, guys.
Sure.
When is that game? Is that early in the season or late?
I'm looking at the Yahoo schedule right now, and it says that we play the Vikings at home twice, so that's completely wrong.
I'm looking. It's November 6th, week
yeah,
9.
Yeah, it looks like 6th, because I know the... Don't we play them on Thanksgiving at home?
Yep.
So that would be the 24th.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we play them, 3 weeks apart, but there's only one opponent sandwich in there because the Lions have a bye. But, yeah, if you guys want to organize a meetup at Vikings, that would be fun.
We'll have to see. Like, it's already straining my wallet to keep going up to Detroit to meet up with Alex and Ryan for our hijinks, so.
You should probably stop buying wrestling tickets then.
No.
I owe my brother $220 for wrestling tickets right now, so.
All right, let's do another question. Oh, I like this one. Joseph R. Sweeney, man, you know the game. You know the game. He wants us to play basically a version of the Dan Le Batard show's game, which is basically like, what do people look like? But his setup is, if Teddy Bridgewater were a children, like, it's kind of hard to explain unless you like hear it. But the way he sets it up is, if Teddy Bridgewater were a children's book hero, Teddy Bridgewater, like, here's some examples he gives. Teddy Bridgewater, a spry, feisty, anthropomorphic teddy bear who loves adventures and bridges.
Is this in honor of Stephen Tulloch's children's book, The Littlest Linebacker?
It might be. Like, he describes Gronk as a lumbering monster who always tries to stop Teddy from crossing the bridge into, you know, the chocolate wonderland or whatever.
I don't know. It sounds like Joseph R. Sweeney is onto something, and maybe he should start his own children's book.
I'm not that imaginative.
I don't think I could come up with anything on the spot right now.
I love this game a lot, but I have done, like, no prep for it. I know the game he's talking about. But I would have to, like, you know, go back and, like, look at some faces, because I am terrible with remembering names to faces.
Here's my one contribution. I was thinking, like, DeAndre Levy, he's like a Shrek kind of character where everyone views him as kind of like this monster, this grotesque guy, but inside, like, he's really a smart, compassionate person, and once you get to know him, he's awesome.
Golden Tate is a necromancer.
All right.
I'll just do that. Like,
he is the
villain, but he's like one of those weird quirky villains. He's like Hades from Hercules, right? Like, he's just he's got a wacky voice, and his head bursts into flames when he's mad, but like he knows magic and he will use it.
Sounds good to me. Okay.
Zach Zenner is definitely the best friend of the main character tragically dies.
Zach Zenner is like the Mary Sue.
You got another question for us?
I've got a couple more here. If you could, big haircut, if you could transform one player from the Lions from his usual level of play to being the best at his position, barring quarterback, who would it be and why? This is a little close to home.
I got a good answer, I feel like. I would say, so we're just taking any player and just making him, like, incredible, basically.
Yeah. Turning him into J.J. Watt style, I guess.
All right. I would say Nevin Lawson on the opposite side of Darius Slay so that we could have two great cornerbacks. I feel like the second cornerback might be one of our weakest spots right now. So having, like, two shutdown cornerbacks would be awesome.
I have a similar but different answer, and it's also on the defense, and it's the left defensive end. I don't even know who's going to start there. But if the Lions could get two pass rushers like the Broncos had last year, that would be amazing. Like,
you guys are both going two for one here. Like, you guys are getting greedy because you're like, I already have a nice guy, so I know I want double. I want two here. Rah.
Yeah.
What's your answer, Chris?
You can't pick a quarterback, but you probably would have.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't pick the quarterback. I wouldn't pick the quarterback. I would take. Who is our other running back behind Amir Abdullah right now, aside from Zach Zenner? I hate him.
Ridley, baby. The Riddler.
I would take Stephen Ridley, and I would turn him into John Cena!
Although on here I'll start calling him sci-fi because he's always so spaced out.
I was about to ask why. Okay, yeah, I get that. That's good. I like that. I like that a lot, Ryan.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Do you get that vibe from him, Chris? I don't.
That he's spaced out.
Yeah.
Which is so spaced.
I mean, like in person.
I don't know. He seems like very focused on something very distant. So I guess maybe that's spaced out. Like, every time I've been with him, it's been like a baseball game, or it's been like a wrestling match, or it's been a plate of mozzarella sticks. There's always something in front of him that demands.
Wait, did you guys mention that on the podcast?
No, he didn't.
God damn it.
Wait, what? Do I know about this?
We went to Sweetwater to get wings, and he ordered mozzarella sticks.
No, f*** him. No.
Why aren't you recording right now?
I am recording.
Are you?
Yes.
Bonus track. That's unbelievable. Mozzarella sticks are...
You know what? You know his whole rationale for ordering mozzarella sticks is that he was the last to order, so it's like Ryan goes, Sweetwater wings. I'm like, yeah, I'll have Sweetwater wings. And, like, you know, Kyle's like, yeah, that sounds good, I'll have Sweetwater wings. And it gets to Reno, and he's like, I want mozzarella sticks. And he looks at us like, I'm just going to get some wings off of you guys. Like, he was planning ahead of time to mooch off of us.